Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan, and thank you for joining me for the second ever New Mainers Speak. This is a brand new weekly half-hour program where you can hear from some of Maine's immigrants, refugees, and political asylum-seeking residents about their lives firsthand. Together, we will visit with individuals regarding their rich life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Joining me live here in the studio today is Ina Demers. She arrived in Maine from Semarang, Middle Java in Indonesia, and she's been here for about 40 years, which is a sharp contrast to last week if you joined us with a guest who had been here just for a year and a half. And I think what you might hear today is a very different story, just or a similar story, just farther down the road. So welcome, Ina.
Thank you, Kate.
Pleasure to have you here. You've been here before, I understand.
Yes, I was promoting the Bayside Festival with Steve Hershon, and that was a program with, to promote that festival, and usually it's very, very good.
Good.
I mean, you know.
Yes, and so when I was giving Ina directions here, she really didn't need them because she has been a student here as an undergrad and a graduate student. She knows the campus far better than I do.
Oh, no. That's not true. There are so many new places now that I am not so familiar with.
Well, you knew your way here, and we're glad to have you here. Can you tell us a little bit about what you think every American should know about Indonesia, since our knowledge for most of us is pretty limited?
Well, Indonesia is between Asia and Australia, and it has about approximately 12,000 islands. I am not sure. I haven't counted it, but that's what they say in the papers. And I came from Java, Middle Java. And even in Java, we have three different languages. We speak Indonesian, but in Middle Java, we also speak Javanese. And that's a dialect for Middle Java. The East Java has Maduranese, and the West Java has Sundanese. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Sundanese. I get confused with Sudan.
I can understand how you might confuse those two.
Sundanese, because that's the, I can't remember now, but it has something to do with Sunda, which is part of the Western Java culture.
Can you tell us a little bit about where and when you were born and what it looked like there at the time?
Oh, geez, that's a long time ago. I was born, born in Indonesia, in Semarang specifically, which is the northern tip of Middle Java. And it's like the weather is always like 95, 97, and over 100 degrees. So it's very nice. And all the plants grow year-round, you know. Just like the Christmas tree here, what do you call that? The
evergreen?
No, the poinsettia. That grows like a tree over there. So that's to show that, you know, it never dies like what we have here.
No.
So, and I went to school there, up to the high school, and I also graduated from a teacher's institute, which allowed me to teach English in the elementary level. So. And I grew up pretty privileged, actually.
Your father do?
Well, my dad was an importer, so, and he was also Dutch educated, and so was my mom. So my first language is actually Dutch.
Is that right?
Yeah, because the Dutch occupied Indonesia for over 300 years ago, you know, for over 300 years until 1942. When the Japanese helped us free us from the Dutch people. But then they also occupied us, the Japanese, until 1945 when Hiroshima and Nagasaki were bombed. So the Japanese military had to go back to defend their own country. So that's when we got our independence, August 17, 1945.
And that was 30 years then before you left Java.
Yeah, something like that, 29 or something years.
Mm-hmm.
So
most of your life, it was an independent country then.
Yes, yes. However, I have Chinese background. I'm from, Chinese ancestry. So actually, Indonesia was not even my country. I was born there. So I believe I was also a refugee, third generation in Indonesia, or fourth generation maybe, because my great-great-great-grandparents perhaps came from China. They were Chinese.
They were Chinese refugees in Java. And then, right? Then you left Java and came to the United States in 1974. Did you come as a refugee or an immigrant? How did that look for you?
Oh, I believed I came as an immigrant, but after I thought about it, in 1965, when we had the, the Chinese were perceived, because the Indonesian president at that time, Sukarno, he was friendly with the Chinese government. And I believe there was a fear of Indonesia turning communist. And with the, at that time, over 400 million people, plus the Chinese population, I'm not sure what that was at that time, that would make a large number of communists. So I'm not sure how that fear started, but the general at that time, General Suharto, I guess was fearful about that, and he led the coup to take over the government. And Sukarno, who used to be the president, went into exile. And after that, everything was completely changed.
It became very dangerous for people of Chinese descent to be living in Jakarta, or in Middle Java.
In Indonesia,
all
period.
Of Indonesia.
Yes, because 2 months after that, where over 500,000 people, Chinese people were killed. It was a sort of a genocide.
Who was killing the 500,000 Indonesians?
Okay. Well, at that time, I believe it was the Indonesian military. Okay. But when I came to the United States after 1974, and I took this class from Professor Rosen, Kenneth Rosen, he told me that he knows a Peter Dale Scott that wrote a poem about Indonesia in 1965. So I read that poem and I found it there, saying that apparently the American government were sending weapons to the Indonesian military to eliminate or to stop the communist movement.
Right,
that they believed. I'm not sure if that's true.
Part of the fear of the domino theory.
Right.
Yes. Wow.
So
you left for your own safety. Is that right? You were feared staying there?
Well, I didn't think that was it, but I came here because I wanted some freedom. As a woman, as a Chinese woman, I have so many glass ceilings to break. the male Chinese and then the female Indonesian and then the male Indonesian. So I have like different, so many things to break. And that's why I thought, in America, I can probably get my freedom. And my mother always told me anyway, you need to go to the United States because you can't keep your mouth shut.
How did your mother think of the United States for you?
She said, you can speak your mind and not get in trouble. you know.
That's a pretty powerful message for a girl. How old were you when she was saying that to you?
Oh, I think I was in the middle school. And I was saying, why is it that we need to, you know, answer the questions verbatim from the books? Why couldn't we say our, you know, because I don't think everything that's in the book is correct or right. I mean, you know, it's not just. There is no justice sometimes. And, you know, there is no Chinese history here. They are all Indonesian history. Where is our Chinese history? And she said, well, you better not ask questions like that because you may end up dead or we might be in trouble.
Wow.
So she said, you know, you better go somewhere else where you can speak your mind.
So off you came to the United States.
Yeah, and I guess.
You brought with you your name. Can you tell us about who named you and if that has meaning for your family?
Oh, well, actually, my first name was Ko In Nyo. It's a three-part name, and it's a Chinese name, actually, that is translated into Indonesian. The last part, Nyo, N-I-O, is to identify females. So, but in 1965, after that September movement, we were told either we had to go back to China or we have to change our names. So we don't even speak Chinese. So the only choice was to stay there and change our name into Indonesian. So to keep my name, my actual name, In, I chose Indriani because that's an Indonesian name. So that's what happened, you know. And then when I married my first husband, who is from Bath, Maine, he named me Ina. So it's an easier name to remember, he said, because he said, I can never say Indriani the right way.
Oh. So you got your nickname Inan. Pretty much everyone knows you as Ina in Portland, right?
Yes, because there is also an Ina poultry in Semarang that he used to get his chicken from.
Oh. We've talked about what caused you to leave your country, but what caused you to come to Orono, Maine, as opposed to some other place in America, as your mom had advised?
You mean Bath, Maine?
Oh, Bath, Maine, yes.
Yes, Bath,
Maine.
Sorry. Well, my husband was from Bath, Maine, and he was an only child. And I was kind of concerned because I can remember, you know, mother-in-laws, you know, it's not so enticing. It's not so favorable sometimes. But when I met my mother-in-law, it was so much different from others. I mean, she accepted me the way I was in those days. I was the only one in Bath, I believe, that looked like this, you know.
Only Chinese?
Only Chinese
looking person,
probably
yeah.
Only brown skin.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, but
there you go, breaking glass ceilings right there.
But she was also an immigrant from England,
ah.
So she never had her citizenship. So she also shared that part with me, and apparently she could understand how I felt and how scared I was. Also, so she was actually a friend. She became a friend of mine.
Hmm. I'm glad you had that when you started out. What was your first memory of Maine? Where did you fly in from, and what was it like when you came here?
Oh, I guess I flew in October into Los Angeles. So that was not so bad, okay? Then we went to Chicago, and that was cold. When I got to Bath, Maine, I said, oh my goodness, what is this place? It was so cold. So it's different from where I came from.
Yeah, we have no giant poinsettia trees.
No.
So can you tell me a little bit about what you like to do for fun? What are your special talents and how do you fill your time?
You know, I'm not sure. My favorite thing is to do things for others, and I'm not sure that Well, I do have a hobby. It's making origami shapes. Okay. But that's because, also because it is so connected to geometry and how I help my English language learner students to sustain the vocabulary that they need when they do their testing, you know, the math. I mean, symmetry. I mean, how can you explain that and how do you use that in daily language? It would be really awkward.
So use the origami as a practical tool for teaching,
yes,
and learning.
But it's not in the curriculum.
Oh, well, I've seen you do it, actually. I have to disclose here. And I know the kids love it.
Yes.
And it makes a difference in their
yes.
lives. You are listening to WMPG 90.9 and 104.1 FM and 281 AC Gorham, Portland. We're broadcasting from USM, and we are Southern Maine Community Radio. I am Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you are just joining us, welcome. Today, I'm having a conversation with Ina Demers, originally from Semarang, Middle Java, Indonesia, and now also from Maine. I would love for you to tell us a little bit about your work, Ina. What led you to being a teacher, and what do you like about it, and how are your experiences as an immigrant, similar to the children you're working with in the mm-hmm. ELL, which is English Language Learners, formerly known as ESOL, which was really a misnomer for, English
as a second language.
And so many of our immigrants and refugees, this is their ninth, their fifth, their third language. So it's now called English Language Learners, and you teach them. Can you tell us about that? You work for the Portland Public Schools?
Yes, I do. My students come from so many different countries, and they already speak so many different languages.
And what do you teach them?
Oh, okay. Well, I teach at the elementary level. My position is actually as an educational technician, which is like an assistant teacher. But my students have taught me so much, specifically those at Riverton School between 2005 and 2007 when I was teaching there a self-contained fourth and fifth grade ESL classroom. The first time I brought up the Thanksgiving and we were reading books, some of them questioned me. Why were those people called pilgrims? And why are we called refugees? What's the difference? And I explored that. I said, well, what do you think is the difference? What do you think mean, what does refugee mean? And they said, well, it's not fun to be a refugee. Because they think we have nothing. You know, they said, we come here with nothing, yes, because we had to leave everything behind. Some of us have homes that are nice, but now we don't. And sometimes we're treated in a different way. Bad connotation.
Yes, would they have preferred to have been called pilgrims? Did they like the way that was defined?
I don't know. They said that pilgrim sounds a lot better than refugee. So, I don't know. That was their opinion. They were fourth and fifth grade kids, you know. But then I met this lady who's also a refugee who wrote a book titled Refugee, The Ugliest Word. And her name is Aftaba Masatovic. I hope I said that right. But she was from Bosnia. And when she left her country, it was in the middle of the night. And this is what her poem, I'm going to read you the poem.
Thank you.
In the middle of the night, on June 28th of 1993, you could hear the scream of the little girl being awakened after sleeping tight. She didn't know there was no choice, that she had to leave or be killed in her own bed. "No, Mom, it's still night," was the little girl's scream. "Leave me alone. Please let me sleep and finish my sweet dream." She couldn't understand why she had to leave, only in her pajamas, with the Barbie dolls on them. The little girl didn't know there was no choice but leave her friends, a beautiful canopy bed, stuffed animals, and all her favorite toys. So after they left, Aftaba told me that she felt bad because of this, and I'm going to read you another poem. "Please forgive me. Please forgive me because I left you on Tuesday morning in the month of May, because I was sick of living in camps and tents. I felt so sorry, but I couldn't stay. Please forgive me that I wasn't there to help you, to heal your sores. You were hurt enough, I know, when I left you, that I made it worse. Please forgive me that I ran away, Mom. I feel guilty. Instead of sharing your pain with you, I left you there. Please forgive me because I didn't stay. I only have one thing to say to you, Mom. I love you, I'm sorry, and I feel guilty." So then she came to the United States, and she had to become a refugee, and that's when she wrote the book, The Ugliest Word.
The Ugliest Word, and you can order it on Amazon?
Yes, anywhere.
And you've met her, is that right?
Yes, I spoke with her several times, and she told me that I can use her book for any purpose.
That's great. You've met so many refugees over time, working with many different families in the Portland Public Schools, and I think you have a sweet understanding, a bittersweet understanding for what it is like to leave your canopy bed, to leave your family, to leave your food, your culture, your temperatures, your language. Mm-hmm. And I think those were beautiful poetic illustrations of the loss and the grief one feels for years mm-hmm. after, even while having exciting new opportunities. Mm-hmm. You hold them both at the same time, don't you?
Yeah. And you know what, Kate? The Center for Grieving Children has created the last few years multicultural group, and they have served some of the Portland Public Schools students. So many of them benefit so much from that center, and if you need anything from them, you know, they can be reached at 775-5216. Or just go to their office on Forest Avenue, and I think it's 555 or so. Mm-hmm. But it has a big sign. They also have a council, multicultural council, that is trying to reach out to the parents now. Because the parents also need help, not just the children. They need to get the support from the community. Mm-hmm. And it's not in monetary value. It's something more than that.
Emotional support, knowing you're not
emotional,
alone.
Emotional, yes.
Mm-hmm. So you have been serving others, what you love to do, and also a huge gift to the community for your 40 years here. What other organizations, associations, groups have been especially helpful to you, and how did you find them?
Oh, well,
and please tell us about
yeah, it's the multilingual office that's part of the Portland Public School, mm-hmm. and they have their annual fundraising event, which is coming in March 21st, I believe. It's a Friday evening, and it's going to happen at the Italian Heritage Center in Portland. Mm-hmm. If you need any information, then, you know, please call 874-8135 and speak with Grace Valenzuela.
And this is called Rock Around the World.
Yes, it's Rock Around the World. You do not need to know how to dance, but we will have different cultural dances that is led by certain community leaders, and it's just for fun. I mean, hundreds of people would be dancing, and we have food, many different cultural foods.
That sounds like a wonderful
evening.
Yes,
it is. It's always fun.
I went to the International Women's Day celebration last night. Similarly, there were women from 30 different countries representing their fanciest dress, their work clothes, their evening wear. And it was populated by about 300 Mainers.
Wow.
From all over the world, both local for long time and local new time.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful event. This is a very similar event for people who are interested in learning more about other cultures that are coexisting right here.
Yes,
in Portland, Maine.
Definitely. And we also have the silent auction.
Oh, good. So learn more about Rock Around the World through the Multicultural Multilingual Center.
Yes.
Through the Portland Public Schools.
Yes.
So I want to say you have been listening to New Mainers Speak. I am Kate Manahan, and I want to give a very special thanks to my guest today, Ina Demers. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me, Kate.
I hope you'll come back and join us sometime.
Well, yeah. I met you at East End Community School.
And where I've seen you firsthand doing the work I believe you were called to do, teaching. Sounds like your mom knew you should teach here, and you knew you should be a teacher.
Yes, I do.
Yes.
Thank you.
You do beautiful work. And in fact, if you want to see some of her origami, she'll have it as part of the silent auction at the Rock Around the World. So you could even own a little piece of Ina Demers. thank you for listening. Please join us each Sunday from noon to 12:30 for similar interviews with diverse community members. Next week, my guest will be Mr. Patrick Kambu, originally from Democratic Republic of Congo. He's currently the president of the Congolese community in Portland and will be joining us the day after their annual International Women's Day celebration, so he can tell you all about it then. I hope you'll join us.